Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you from Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood, which almost won half of the parliamentary seats in Egypt, is flexing its muscles against the ruling military council. Now, the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, or SCAF, which took over ruling Egypt after former dictator Hosni Mubarak was overthrown, is stopping the progress of the Egyptian revolution. This is according to the Muslim Brotherhood, and SCAF has responded with indignation. Meanwhile, the Persian Gulf Arab country, United Arab Emirates, has openly accused the Muslim Brotherhood of plotting to overthrow the Arab monarchies in the Persian Gulf. We will be zooming in on Egypt in this news analysis.
The Egyptian junta has expressed outrage over the Muslim Brotherhood's accusing it of stalling the popular revolution last year. The Brotherhood says that the military council seeks to stay in power through controlling and supporting the current government led by Prime Minister Ghansouri. After winning a landslide victory in the recent parliamentary elections, the Muslim Brotherhood's political arm, the Freedom and Justice Party, has been pressuring the military to sack the cabinet. However, the ruling junta, which took power after the popular uprising that toppled longtime ruler Hosni Mubarak, has stood by the cabinet. The Brotherhood accuses the military-appointed government of incompetence, listing unrest, interference in the judiciary, and the stalling of reforms. The Muslim Brotherhood recently warned that anyone who wants to bring back the former regime will be stopped, as the people won't allow it to happen. Meanwhile, in another development, the United Arab Emirates has accused the Muslim Brotherhood of plotting to bring down the Arab monarchy in the Persian Gulf. For over a year now, these countries, especially Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, have been using brutal force to stifle popular pro-democracy and change movements. The Muslim Brotherhood has not reacted to the Emirates' claims. The rise of Islam and the revolutions that are sweeping the Arab world is not something to be overlooked. For decades, people in the Arab countries have been calling for democracy in their countries. However, the US and British-backed Arab regimes have suppressed their calls. They have even interfered to crush popular demands for change and democracy in other Arab countries, including Bahrain and Yemen. Now those people once behind the scenes are taking their ground, as seen in Libya, Egypt, and Tunisia. Only time can tell which country would be next to see the ongoing revival of the people's awakening in the Arab world.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from London, historian and political commentator, Mr. Peter Rushton, and from Cairo, chairman of the International Law Department of Cairo University, Dr. Ahmed Abulwafa. And from Belfast, author and Middle East expert, Mr. Saib Shath from Belfast. Welcome, all of you, to the program. Well, I'd like to start this off in London. Now, Mr. Rushton, Muslim Brotherhood has accused the Supreme Council of Armed Forces of stalling the revolution that ousted Hosni Mubarak. How valid is their point?
Well, there's been increasing evidence over the last few months, and especially very recently, that the military leadership is looking to turn itself into a form of permanent government, a form of permanent government that isn't necessarily an overt military dictatorship or an overt autocracy, as we see in so many other parts of the Middle East, but possibly the sort of permanent government that we saw for so many decades in Turkey. A form of deep power based in the military, based on the fact, of course, that the military gets such a vast amount of aid from the United States and is therefore, in an increasingly impoverished Egypt, one of the few sources of enormous amounts of foreign currency, and so one of the few career paths that people can choose that's going to be well rewarded in terms of foreign currency. That they believe that the Supreme Council wants to fix the constitution and to fix the ongoing constitutional discussions to embed itself as that form of permanent government regardless of the wishes of the people. And this was seen most recently when, despite the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood and for that matter, as a Salafist party as the main opposition, had between them achieved well over 50% of the vote, a group of parties that got less than 9% of the vote was presuming to dictate the pace of constitutional change and to assert that it should have a dominant role in whatever constitutional discussions go on.
All right, well, let me turn to Cairo. Let me turn to Cairo and get Dr. Abul Wafa's perspective on that. Do you think that the SCAF is trying to embed itself permanently, as our previous guest has just said?
No, I don't think so. I think the electoral process and the political process in Egypt will continue. The SCAF is the guardian of this political process. If there are some doubts about his rule, these doubts are on a theoretical basis, not on a de facto or a practical basis. So the question is of wait and see. If these doubts are proven invalid, so these doubts are removed. If these doubts are proven valid, so I think Egyptian people will not accept any deformation of its will, and will, I think, descend to protest against any fraud which should have been occurred, as was the case in the political, the previous political era.
So, sir, are you confident? You are in Cairo. Are you confident that the SCAF will step down when it originally said, which would be after the presidential election in a few months?
Yes, I think if a new president is elected, the rule of the SCAF should terminate, and it should hand over all powers to the president and to all political organs regularly established and set up by the Egyptian people.
Okay, well, let me turn to Syed Shaath. Mr. Shaath, how do you see it now that there's only a few months remaining to when the SCAF is supposed to be stepping down? And as we can see, as we get closer to that time, we have the Muslim Brotherhood speaking out against what the military junta has done. And, of course, we have them responding in kind. How likely is it that because of this differences of opinion that possibly there could even be a delay now in the election and perhaps used as an excuse for the ruling junta to stay on longer?
But we can see that through the open confrontation, which is the SCAF now have the powerful ruling council, military, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which is the Muslim Brotherhood right now, is assessing and consolidating power over Egypt's political system. The rumor said earlier it would not contend in Egypt's presidential election as part of power sharing agreement, which was among other leading political powers in Egypt. Now we witness they are changing their position and considering putting forward a candidate to the presidential election, which is the breaking of an earlier promise. That promise by the Muslim Brotherhood meant was to ease fears among liberals and the military generals, as well to appease the Muslim allies that Egypt won't fall totally under an Islamic military control. Islamic parties now establish a dominant role as well in the 100-member body chosen by the parliament to write the country's new post-revolutionary constitution. Liberals and leftists as well accuse Islamic parties of taking over the process of drawing the country's a new constitution. So the constitution actually been written by one side, as Baradei himself said, which is the Muslim Brotherhood. This is, to me, as I see it, and I want to call it, a real political tangle. If we look at the Israeli side as well from this equation, we can understand, if you allow me, the picture a little bit clearer. One of the political objectives of the latest Israeli wave of criminal attacks on Gaza was to test the Egyptian Islamic Party's reaction to such an attack. 2 weeks ago, on the 13th of March, precisely, the Egyptian MPs declared Israel as number one enemy of the Egyptian state. They said they will revise all the Egyptian relations and agreements with the Zionist entities in a protest against the Israeli attack on Gaza. We know what is the Israeli embassy and to halt the transporting the gas to Israel. I know the vote is largely symbolic, as only the ruling military council itself, which controls the country, but that in its own can indicate what the future holds to the relationship with the Zionists. And the other, you can see other ones, as well, Hamas in Gaza and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, they both together work to expose the military in Egypt as a part to the American and Israeli siege on Gaza. And that puts the Egyptian military in the spot.
Okay, now, let me turn. Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Shath, but got to get everybody in on this discussion. Turning back now to London. Mr. Rushen, do you think that Washington is just sitting back right now and watching Egypt, which was the U.S.'s main ally in the region, after Israel, of course, will it just sit back and watch it fall from its hands, especially now that the Egyptian parliament, it is said that its main enemy is Israel? Will Washington just sit back and allow this Egyptian revolution to go in the direction that the Egyptians want it to go?
Well, we've seen very clearly in the last week or two what Washington's position is going to be when the State Department, the U.S. State Department, abandoned even the pious form of words that they'd used previously, saying that U.S. aid was going to be conditional on Egypt, on Egypt's rulers pursuing a constitutional path, respecting freedoms, all these sorts of things. Now all of that's been set on one side. The State Department now no longer has these conditions for their aid to the Egyptian military, clearly preparing the way to allow the Egyptian military, whether under the name SCAF or whether under whatever other name on any other future constitutional settlement, for the Egyptian military to continue playing the role it always has of a force of last resort for American and Zionist power to ensure that Egypt does not become the forceful ally of a Palestinian uprising. That is the Washington-Tel Aviv axis main policy, to ensure that Egypt does not fulfill a role of being a significant ally, a powerful ally to the forces of Palestinian liberation. Now, it may well be that SCAF will change its name. The question is, what type of constitution will come out of this? What will be the balance, for example, between the president and the parliament? And what will be the role of this very sinister figure, Omar Suleiman, who has just come back into the political scene and indicated that he will now be running for president? What are his intentions? A man who for 13 years was the intelligence chief for Mubarak, a man who was at the center of Washington's operations in terms of global torture, a man who was at the center of all sorts of sinister maneuvers and in terms of discussions with the Zionist entity as well.
Okay.
Egyptian Zionist discussions.
All right,
what's
let me turn to Dr. Abu Wafa in Cairo. Dr. Abu Wafa, how concerned are you at this point in time of the revolution's goals being compromised? Taking into account some of the examples that Mr. Rushen has just given, tell me about your concern or the lack thereof as you're sitting in Cairo.
I think the objectives of the revolution will be achieved and realized after the institution and the establishment and the setting up of all political institutions provided in any democratic state. All these goals, be they scientific, social, or economic goals, will be achieved in this regard.
All right, well, let me turn back to Belfast now and get Mr. Shath back in on this. Now, the head of the Bay Police has openly accused the Muslim Brotherhood of plotting to overthrow the Arab monarchies in the Persian Gulf. This comes as Saudi Arabia and Qatar seeking regime change in Syria, and they, along with the U.S., interfered in Yemen. So how can a political party in Egypt actually overthrow the Saudi or the Bahraini regime? What exactly do you think that they're worried about?
Oh, that to me is scaremongering on the part of the U.S. and the Saudi, Qatar as one plan to keep their feudalist monarchists suppressing and dominating the people, and to deny the people in these countries any chance to implementing the brave example of the Bahraini people revolution. The United States of America, who are planning now to lose the Iranian people's will and their welfare, are not going to allow any of the people in this Mashiachism to have a share in the 40% of the world oil which the United States control and loses in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and the rest of that. That's why they use now this scaremongering of Muslim Brotherhood conspiracy and stuff like that, so they deny any people movement in that area with that prefix. Saying that, it's always, as I said, it's part of the tango happening right now with the United States of America and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Let me comment in your previous guest when they mentioned the position of the United States of America. I agree with them totally on that. Usually, the United States of America, if we look at three countries, Pakistan, Turkey, and Egypt, they control these states through the military apparatus. Pakistan and Egypt, the U.S. and Israel, comfortable with the arrangements they helped to put in place, which is the army is controlling the state and the state policies, and the government cannot linger or touch the state policies. So the relationship between the military and the United States of America always run the show, and the government will be on the side. We can look at that very clearly in Pakistan. And that's what they try to export and implement in Egypt right now by any way. So the Brother Muslimhood right now, they are trying to threaten the military with their military industrial complex in Egypt, which is supported and funded by $2 billion a year by the United States of America. And they said they would claim that industrial complex, which is accounts for nearly 30% of the Egyptian economy, to be controlled by the parliament, which means by the Islamic party. That will deny the wealth and the benefits which this military junta and the rest of them is benefiting out of the aid, which supports the American aid to the Egypt, which actually to the junta.
Okay.
All
right. I hate to interrupt you, Mr. Schaaf. Hate to interrupt you, but let me turn to Peter Rushton and get his perspective on this. Now, it seems that the Persian Gulf Arab monarchies are afraid of the rippling effects of the popular revolutions in Arab countries, especially in Egypt, where people are moving in a direction to decide their own fate and decide what government they want. Isn't it about people's power to vote in the kind or vote for the kind of government that they want?
Yes, it's about whether the future of the countries of the Persian Gulf is going to continue to be determined by princes and kings and field marshals and spy chiefs and gangster politicians such as Saleh in Yemen, whether those types of people right across the region are going to continue in power as they have done for decades as the chosen puppets of this Washington-Tel Aviv axis, or whether the future belongs to people who are the legitimate voice of their respective peoples. That's the choice that faces the Gulf, and we've seen the extraordinary statement by this police chief in Dubai, in effect saying that the Muslim Brotherhood is a threat because it threatens to depose autocracies. I don't think you'll see that statement being publicised very much in the media in this country, because of course in London and Washington the governments here like to pretend that they are the friends of democracy and that all this money that is pumped into the various regimes in the region is to preserve and promote democracy. In fact, of course, most of the time, almost all of the time, it's to protect and preserve the generals, the princes, the kings, the usual autocrats who've been used as the puppets over the years. And in fact, this money is used to hold back the voice of the people rather than to liberate the voice of the people. That's the key balance, if you like, at the moment between the voice of the people and the voice of the autocracies.
Okay.
And in the case of Egypt, the important thing is whether the Muslim Brotherhood will allow itself in this constitutional discussion period to be provoked
to be provoked by the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, to be provoked by people like Omar Suleiman, into a premature grab for power. That's the key issue. Or whether they will pursue, if you like, the Nasrallah strategy in Lebanon, a broadly based strategy of building coalitions with as many people in civil society, as many people in trade unions, as many people in different religious groups.
Okay.
This is the key to Egypt, whether
all
they
right.
can successfully pursue what we could call the Nasrallah strategy. The
okay, that is the key to Egypt in your
in
perspective. But let me turn to Dr. Abul Wafa. First of all, I wanted to talk to you about the key also that you think is to the victory in your country. And overall, what do you think about the impact of the emergence of all of these independent and popular Arab governments for the absolute monarchies in the Persian Gulf, especially for Saudi Arabia, or those with close, very close ties with the U.S.?
I think with regard to the Egyptian revolution, it is an internal affair concerning the Egyptian people. So Muslim Brotherhoods or other political factions have not the right to intervene or to provoke any changes in other countries. One of the principles of contemporary international relations is that a state and any other political faction cannot or are not entitled to intervene in matters which are essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of any state. And the political regime of a state is one of the pure domestic and internal affairs. So I think the fears of Persian states are not well-founded, because no one in Egypt imagined that he may intervene in those countries.
Okay, and Saab Shahath, last question, we're just about out of time. Your take, again, on the key now. What's the key to Egypt's victory and true independence? In 30 seconds, sir, please.
The Muslim Brotherhood are now showing their own cards. They are sick. They are looking for the candidate for the presidential election. They are trying to take over the military complex industry and the donation from the United States of America and the panel for putting the constitution to counter the Supreme Court injunction against the last election, as it was complex, voting, and the voting system wasn't working well. So and now they are trying to counter that with the ISCAF, but they are paying the price of allowing ISCAF to consolidate power before. The key to the success of the Egyptian revolution is to continue the revolution, to give the people the power back, and to continue the revolution, not to collude with the SCAF or with the United States of America. And that's the mistake which the Muslim Brotherhood done.
All right. And I'd like to thank all my guests for being with me on this program. Historian and political commentator Peter Rushen in London. Chairman of the International Law Department of Cairo University, Dr. Ahmed Abul Wafa in Cairo, and author and Middle East affairs expert, Mr. Saab Shahath in Belfast. Thank you all for being with us, and thank you, viewers, for being with us. And join us right here, same time, same place, tomorrow on another close-up look at one of tomorrow's top headline stories. I'm Marzieh Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye.